Now, we've got 10 minutes for questions, and we've got some microphones set up here on each side, so if you just come to a microphone. I see Michael Volpe over here on my left. Michael?
Professor McMurtry, the last time I heard words so as depressing as yours is when I read Francis Fukuyama's The End of History and his triumphal declaration that market liberalism had triumphed for all times. Are you really that pessimistic? Do you not see any optimism or grounds for optimism in Seattle, in Windsor, in Quebec City, in the democracy conferences? I mean, even Jeffrey Simpson has written a book saying we're living in a one-party state. So, you know, do you see some grounds for optimism?
Yeah, yes, if I'd had more time, I was going to go in for some of those. I think we're, as the title of my the works book goes, Value Wars, that we're very much in a value war, or based on that. And it's between the values of life in all the variations that we have from the opposition. It's always some form of life protective concern they have, whether it's against GMOs or for subsistence farmers or whatever. That's the unifying structure of all the opposition movement. And I think it's precisely, I would go further. I just want to analyze, diagnose this latest moment, the war in Afghanistan. I think it's precisely because of the success of these movements. It's precisely, and if I'd had more time, I would have read why I thought it occurred just when it occurred. It happened as the height. I mean, every time there was a WTO demonstration, it got bigger, no matter how bad the beatings, the gassings, the clubbings, etc., the demonstrations got bigger, and across the world, across continents. And we had a president who was the laughingstock of the world and moreover illegitimate. And we had, really, I think, I wondered when I saw the demonstration in Quebec, I thought to myself, they don't know what they're doing any longer. They have so delinked from what I call the life ground that they have nothing, no resources left. And in my manuscript, I'm saying this, I'm asking this question, and then boom, 9/11 occurred. It was just like, what are they going to do next? Because it was clear they were in a panic. They did not know how to respond to people's concerns, which was obviously out of their ken. They couldn't understand it. And so they just came across with propagandist declarations. Since 9/11, just to go on, because I completely agree with you, I think 9/11 has been, as it were, permitted in the way that past assassinations, Pearl Harbor itself, back further, have been, as it were, constructed, allowed, and why was, and there's a lot of evidence for that, but I don't want to get into that now, is precisely because of the success of the opposition, which is moving across the world. And it really does join people in an unprecedented way, and across, really across cultures, languages, socioeconomic positions. And it's very interesting, since 9/11, in Europe, we live in such a, I mean, we live in, as it were, the center of the totalitarian bubble, and I think it's a PR totalitarianism. In Canada, is very much like the U.S. in this way. But in Europe, you know how many people support the Afghanistan war in Greece, the place that democracy started? 8%. There's no place in Europe where more than 22%, other than Britain, which is just a captive state, as you know. Great book by the Bombio on that very title, by the way, on just how much corporations are right inside their decision-making apparatuses. Outside of Britain, and even Britain, the figures have fallen by almost 20% in the last week or so. 65% and 66% of Germany and France, respectively, are against the war in Afghanistan. This was weeks ago. So I think that, you know, they've discharged in this, and that's why they have to have a permanent war. This is a war with no end. This is a war we can never say is over. Is precisely because of the strength of the opposition, which I call the rising of the life ground.
Over here. Thank you, John. Barry Zwicker from Vision TV Mediafile. In this same room, just a couple or 3 years ago, Michael Parenti said that they don't know when to stop. There's no sense of proportion when it comes to the greed. And you said something similar. And insofar as we could look, it seems that the Bush regime is tremendously emboldened. What overstepping
do you foresee that would help to trigger serious resistance? I mean, this room is pretty full. It's great, but it should there should be standing room only. What oversteppings would you foresee?
It's hard to see that it hasn't, all the oversteppings haven't already occurred. And this is why I think it's, you know, a society's only as good as the people in it and their understanding of what's their ability to oppose these kinds of things. I think we're really in a movement, and despite what Michael and I share our view of, that there's a rising of the life ground, they have overstepped every bound. It takes the breath away, as I said inside that talk. It takes the breath away about, but what are they going to do next? I mean, they took the election. I mean, just what's next? And I really think it's a matter of like a collective trance of people captured inside a mass superstition, because it's all this talk about the market and the invisible hand and growth, and, you know, it's basically just cover stories for money sequencing without limit. So I think it's really up to the action of understanding of the people.
I'm going to take one more question from each mic, and that's all. I'm sorry. Over here.
My name is Michel Dugri. I'm a garment worker. I agree that the source of the war against Afghanistan has to be found not in Afghanistan, but in the United States or in Canada or France. It's rooted in what they cannot achieve in their own countries, what the capitalist rulers cannot achieve in their own countries. They cannot reverse the decline of the rate of profit, and are driven to more and more commercial wars against each other and more to wars. But the point I wanted to make is that this is not a sign of strength on their side. They're driven to war because nothing else works. And even in Afghanistan, you can see that. They can kill people. They can overthrow a government. They can even probably build a pipeline through Afghanistan. They will not be able to stabilize the situation there. They will not be able to put in place a dictatorship or a protectorate like they did in the 50s, because they cannot buy out a middle class that, you know, could identify with their domination like they did in Congo or in even Spain or Portugal or during the 50s. And so what you see today, the other side of the thing, is that they cannot defeat people, really. Like, they cannot defeat the Palestinians. They cannot defeat the Irish who fight against UK domination in Ireland. They cannot defeat the Quebecois. They won't be able to stabilize this thing. And it's already there, the opposition. That's the form it takes. Just to finish, last week they had to jail 200 teachers in New Jersey for defying an injunction. They can do that. They are the ruling class, the capitalist rulers. But these teachers were not defeated. They were defiant, in fact, even when they went in and out of jail. And so, but you're learning through that. Working people are learning through these experiences that, you know, the problem is right here. It's not in Afghanistan. The terrorists, like you said, are right here, right here in this country.
I don't think that the falling rate of profit explains all that's going on in terms of this. I think there has to be outlets, and I think the public sector is the new colonies of the world of what you can move your money sequences. I always have to have a greater accumulation to go to the next terrain. It always has more. It has to find more places to, quote, invest in, or more to sequence to return profits. And I think that we have it's driven by a totalitarian logic by its nature. It has to go everywhere in order to find new outlets, new markets, and so forth. And there's none left, therefore and I think since 1980 it's turned on itself. It's turned on itself in the public sectors. It's the stripping of the public sectors and the privatization of them is, I think, where the ultimate action of the world is going on. And the Afghanistan war is a demonstration war dealing with symptoms and the reign of terror that must, in fact, be instituted to terrify people into obedience to the earth that's being stripped right in front of them, not only the natural earth, but their own basic victories of hundreds of years of history. Totalitarianisms always collapse. They always collapse suddenly. without warning. I think even in Ontario we had that kind of mood going on, and all of a sudden that particular front face is gone, and they have to coin a new one. Well, they succeed at this. I think I agree it's coming. It will definitely come to an end. The question is how much will be destroyed first, and I think that's back to the action of understanding and why it's important. I think shaking the head, as it were, and that this is the one thing it cannot deal with. I think where it functions on the basis of terror and trance, and we're right at the apogee of that.
You made an interesting analogy between Nazi Germany of the 1930s with the burning of the Reichstag to the United States of 2001. I think that you were as well saying that with Pearl Harbor that was kind of allowed
well,
by...
Well, there seems to be a lot of evidence,
allowed by the United States to, in order to justify getting into the war, and that the events perhaps of September 11th were also allowed by the United States to propagate this
war. For wholly different kinds of reasons, yes.
I'm wondering, what would you say should be the reaction of the United States and the West, whoever it may be, to the events of September the 11th that are different or would be different, in your view, from what has taken place?
Well, I think that a lot of what's going on is the delegitimation, but everybody seems to be afraid to say that, and I'm going to quote, I was in California a while ago, and I was on the stage with David Corton, who many of you might know, the guy who wrote When Corporations Rule the World and other good work, and we were the two speakers, and he said, and this was not so long, a few weeks after, and he said to a larger audience than is here, he said, and we'd been arguing about it all day, but he was on the negative side, but he said to the people, right out of the blue, he said, I think when I first saw this 9/11 event, I said, this is a setup. And there was this long, long pause. Nobody in a large California American audience, nobody protested. Nobody challenged, because there was a question period after. And I really think that until then, nobody dared say it, but then people, it was out, and everybody shared the view. And I think this is this delegitimation of what's going on, because the whole thing functions as, the Patriotism Act and so forth, is that seeing through it, and not only seeing through it, but being bold about declaring about seeing through it, is really the key, again, to undo the trance.
What I'm asking, I guess, is what are you suggesting the response of the United States or the West should have been to the events of September the 11th, whether they were created by the United States or others. I'm not sure what it is that you're saying there.
Well, I mean, the way it was all set up by the ISA, Pakistan, and so forth, there were so many, that's why almost the first sentence I gave in giving my talk was to understand this as a process. That if you isolate a single moment of the process, you lose your bearings, and there's precisely that fragmentation and isolation into a single event that they depend upon to sustain the trance. It's a process, and that process can be tracked right back to when they first started funding these people and so on, and this was one moment of a long process that is embedded in a larger, wider global process, and so the response... I suppose, would be to wake up with what you're actually doing on the governing levels, those who aren't part of the gang, which is, not...
No, I'm sorry, but we've got to move on, and...
Well, I think the normal processes of law are already available in spades for dealing with that kind of terrorist act. That killed lots of people, not only Americans. I think there's a lot of law in place, and a lot of law and apprehension of what was going on existed before September 11th, and it wasn't acted on. So I think the normal processes of law, we have a rule of law, we operate in accordance with the rule of law, and what has been distinguished this whole process is, just as everything else is doing, it's lawless from beginning to end. Rule of law.
Well, John, I wish we could let John go on very much longer and let this dialogue go on very much longer, but we have many other things that we want to do this afternoon. I'm going to do two things right now. The first thing I'm going to do on your behalf is formally thank John for that superb text that he prepared for us. John is that rarest of persons. He's a tenured radical. That is rare, you know. And a public intellectual. John McMurtry is a person who sees deeply and he speaks prophetically. Thank you very much, John.
Thank you.